Hello, Open Heart Project. I very much look forward to sitting with you today during this time of great uncertainty and intensity. It is in such times where it becomes crystal clear how powerful and important our meditation practice is, not only because it has proven to reduce stress or help support your immune system and things that are equally important, but because it also gives you a way to be brave, a way to be with what is happening. And at a time like this, that is very hard. And we need people who can remain present and awake, because those are the people who can actually care. And we all need breaks, certainly. I know I do. But it is under these circumstances where we can actually bring benefit to ourselves, those we love, and the world. So I hope that doesn't sound like too grand of a statement, because actually, very soon, we're just going to sit here and do nothing. However, it seems to have these extraordinarily far-reaching consequences. If you're used to meditating with the Open Heart Project, you may notice I'm in a different place. I'm in my office, my studio, where I work, which is, I'm very, very fortunate. Do not think for one moment that I don't recognize how lucky I am that I have a separate workspace that is almost adjacent to where I live. I live in an apartment building, and this is a very small apartment, very close to where I live with my husband. And he's still going to work for his own very good reasons. And unfortunately, we are social distancing from each other. It is the right thing to do, but it's weird. Anyway, here I am, where I seem to now live, and it's where I work, so I'm very lucky to be able to have this place to go to. Before we sit together today, which we will do for 10 minutes, and if you don't want to hear any of this, just skip ahead to where the meditation begins, because I know that everyone's schedule is messed up, and my heart especially goes out to moms and dads who may suddenly have children at home that they also need to take care of in addition to working or figuring out what to do about work. So if you can't do this today, don't worry about it. I thought this would be a very good time to examine what are called the six paramitas, or transcendent actions. And we're going to just look at one of them today, and then in subsequent weeks, we'll look at the other ones. And the reason I want to talk about the six paramitas, or transcendent actions, is because they are said to be, in the Buddhist view, the way that we navigate from the shores of crazy town, from the shores of insanity and sorrow and anger and fear to the other side, the shores of order and balance and peace and loving kindness and all the things that we long for. It may seem that we are a very far distance from that shore, and we are. However, there's a way to get there in the Buddhist view. That way is called the six paramitas. They are very, when you hear them, you'll be like, oh yeah, I know what that is. You already know how to do them. But they are so powerful because they have the capacity to change a world of pain into a world of loving kindness. So don't take my word for that, or anything for that matter. Listen, test, see what you think. The first paramita, the first transcendent action upon which all the other paramitas are based. Without this one, all the other paramitas are not that useful. You need this one as the foundation. It is the ground from which the other paramitas spring, and it is called generosity. generosity in one of the liturgies I've done in my life as a Buddhist practitioner is the virtue that produces peace. Generosity is the virtue that produces peace. So it can be, this is a particularly hard time to think of being generous. I know that we all want to help and do whatever we can, but there also we also may be very frightened for ourselves. Maybe you've lost income. Maybe you're uncertain about your professional life. Maybe you you're not well. Maybe you are afraid that someone you love is unwell. In such times, we shut down and we want to keep all our toilet paper for ourselves. And I'm not saying don't be prepared and don't stock up on whatever it is you need. I'm not suggesting that. Nor am I suggesting that you give away everything you have. You need to take care of yourself and your family, and that is not under question here. We can still be generous. Generosity begins and arises organically when you, from the sense of your inner richness. When you connect with the richness you possess, generosity is not a problem. You have so much, you're like, yeah, I'll give you one of these. I got a lot more back here. So for some of us may be actually rich. You may have a bukus of money and, you know, a bomb shelter and all sorts of a personal physician living with you and all the things, all the food and toilet paper you could ever want. Fabulous. You can really afford to be generous. However, you don't have to be rich in that conventional way to be generous. You have goodness in your heart. I know that sounds sappy right now, but trust me, it is not. When you share the goodness that is in your heart, your longing for health, your longing for a good human society, very genuinely, that is a gift to others because it unlocks that longing in them. And we can all admit to how much we long for a good world. So you can always give something. And most important, you can always give something to yourself. That is a really important place to start. You can give yourself a break. You can give yourself a rest. You can give yourself permission to feel whatever it is you feel. You can give yourself permission to like zone out and, you know, watch whatever it is you like. You can give yourself permission to sleep more. You can give yourself permission to be sad. That is a very profound gesture of generosity. I'm giving it to myself right now. So in classical Buddhist view, generosity actually takes three forms, and I'll go through them very briefly. And then we will sit, which itself is a gesture of generosity, first toward yourself, but it's also generous to me because I know you're working with your mind and you're not about to go off. That really helps me. The first form of generosity is called giving material things. It's pretty straightforward. There's a lot of opportunity right now. If you have some money, you could give some money to someone or something that needs it. There are a lot of people who are trying to give personal protective equipment by sewing masks and donating gloves and other things to healthcare workers. If you are a healthcare worker, I invite everyone on earth, or at least who's watching this video, to pause and thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You are giving an extraordinary gift of generosity. If your child is grumpy, you could read them a book. If you know a relative who is lonely, you could give them a call. This all falls under the category of giving material possessions. And it doesn't have to be big things, although it can be. But I have found that just as anxiety and loving kindness are incompatible, they can't coexist. It is true for anxiety and generosity. You cannot be generous and super stressed out at the same time. At least for a moment, generosity supplants fear. So it is a gift that you give yourself. The second form of generosity is called giving the gift of fearlessness. Right now, we all need to do what we can to give each other that gift. That gift does not look like this. So this is what you don't do. Everything's fine. Don't worry. everybody's exaggerating, or you just stay home, everything's cool. Bullshit is not called giving the gift of fearlessness. Excuse my language. Giving the gift of fearlessness here looks more like encouraging others to do what they can to take care of themselves. Don't be afraid to take care of yourself. Encouraging others to pursue their path, the spiritual path or otherwise. It doesn't look like explaining why it's okay, why you don't have to be afraid. Rather, it looks like being with other people as they work through what they are experiencing. It's the being with that is the gift of fearlessness. So it's not easy because we want to fix things for people. Or when we see someone else who's afraid, we get afraid. So when we try to tell them why they don't have to be afraid, we're actually talking to ourselves. But this is a very simple gesture, I would say, especially in these times of pandemic, to simply be with the people in your life as best you can, as they work through what they work through, and be an encouraging presence. The final gift, the third of generosity, is called giving the gift of Dharma. Dharma means wisdom or path. It doesn't have to be the Buddha Dharma, but it means something like sharing what you actually know to be helpful, actual wisdom. If there's something that helps you to manage the difficulty of this time, then you could share it with someone else who wants to know what it is, as opposed to you don't know if they want it. You know, we all want to fix the situation. We want to fix each other. And that is lovely, but it can also result in strange insistences upon giving you my advice, spiritual, emotional, physical, nutritional. And if I would like that advice and I trust you to, well, please share it with me. But otherwise, please do not. So, giving the gift of material things, giving the gift of fearlessness, giving the gift of Dharma. These are three ways we can immediately rouse generosity. And when I or you am willing to be generous, even in fearful situations, that gives the other courage. So generosity is itself a gesture of courage and a source of courage for others. And we need those sources right now. So I hope this is useful. Next week, I'll continue with the second paramita, which is called discipline. Each of the paramitas counterbalances the other. Generosity without discipline is kind of sappy. Discipline without generosity is kind of harsh. So anyway, next week, we will examine discipline together, but right now we're going to practice generosity, aka sitting meditation. Please begin your practice by relaxing. Here, relaxing doesn't mean spacing out. It means allowing yourself to be as you are. That's what we mean by relax.
You do you.
Sit up straight. You can sit on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair. Or if you're not feeling well or you have back pains, just lie down. That's fine too. But in all cases, rouse a sense of upliftedness in the body. The hands rest on the legs, palms down, and they're just resting. You guys, take a break. You don't have to do anything right now. Feel heavy from the waist down, like these are your tree roots, and they hold you in place, and you're solid. And from the waist up, feel light, and like you are aspiring up to the sunlight. Also, you're just sitting there. Let the front body relax, the belly, the chest, the throat. Shoulders. It feels at these times that we're pulling a heavy weight. Well, if you feel that way, imagine that someone has just taken that weight off your shoulders and set it down, and there's a kind of buoyancy returns and a coolness between the shoulder blades. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth are slightly parted. And let the muscles of speech relax. The tongue, the throat, etc. And let the inclination to speak relax too, because you don't need it right now. And enjoy your own silence, because when you look inside, there actually is nobody in there talking. Who knew? It is quiet. So reconnect with that silence. The eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a spot in front. And the reason the eyes are open in this particular form of meditation is because this is a practice of wakefulness, and it is much easier to be awake, present, and available when your eyes are open. At the same time, the gaze is soft, and there's a sense that vision mixes with space rather than laser pointing at anything. And the crown of the head reaches up a little bit. Now let your attention rest on the breath, which does not mean observe the breath or think about the breath. It means feel the breath. Feel the body breathing, the gentle expansion on the inhale and the letting go of the exhale. Let your mind rest on the breath as if the breath was a hammock that swayed in and out, and you place your mind in the hammock and let it be carried on the wave of breath, breathing in and out. Your mind will continue to make thoughts, which is fine. There's no effort to stop thinking or slow thinking or change thinking. Ixnay, let your mind be as it is. Imagine your thoughts are like birds flying through the sky. And in this practice, we identify with the sky, not the birds. So vast, spacious, and able to hold it all. And if you notice that you become fully absorbed in thought to the point where you've forgotten about your breath, not a little bird flying by, but you got on an airplane and you went away, excellent. Notice that. Say to yourself, silently thinking, let go. Whoosh, it's gone. Come back to the breath. And begin again. This is the practice, and we will sit together. Thank you so much for your practice. It's important. I appreciate you so much for doing it. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. People all over the world are sitting with you and me right now. Please remember at the Open Heart Project, we have 4 meditations a day together. You can find all the information here. It's free. Please invite anyone you want to join. The 3rd of the 4 sits per day is always in Spanish, so if you prefer to get your instruction in Spanish, please come then. And please be well. And I send you my love.